Well, the value of land, which is usually expressed in terms of a monetary price, is the ultimate point of contention in its sale. This observation leads us to ask, what factors determine the value of our good earth farmland?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned into the 1007th edition of the Food Chain Radio program right here on the GCN Radio Network. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends way down there in Port Vanier who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Where wherever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Jason Struby on the boards. Hello, Jason.
Good to be here.
All right, folks, this from Pearl Buck in The Good Earth. It is the end of a family when they begin to sell their land. Out of the land we came, and into it we must go. And if you hold on to your land, you can live. No one can rob you of land. Given that thought, it would seem the Good Earth farmland of which Pearl Buck be beyond value. But, of course, it does have value and, in fact, is bought and sold like any other commodity. Unlike other commodities like potatoes or wheat, farmland has no set price, as an acre of farmland here is not the same as an acre of farmland there. What is the true value of farmland? A seller of farmland might claim its value to be X plus 10. A buyer may say the value of the farmland is X minus 10. Seller and buyer talk things over and agree to consummate the sale on the land at the price of X. When their transaction has been completed, the value of that farmland can then be said to be X. Not all farmland, of course, is worth X. There are many factors that determine the value of each parcel. And so today we pause to ask, what factors determine the value of our good earth farmland? Here to help us answer these questions, we have some really good real estate folks. And I'm going to start off, just do it alphabetical, with Chuck Allen, who is a realtor with Keller Williams in Watsonville, California. Chuck, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thank you, Michael.
Pleased to have you aboard. Keller Williams is a national affiliation, a national brand, right?
Yes, international, actually.
International?
In 13 other countries.
And you've been selling farm real estate for a long time, Chuck.
Yes, I started right out of college at Cal Poly when I graduated. I started in the 60s, and before you know it,
there
45
you
years passed.
So you've sold a few parcels of farmland that can help us out here. You're in primarily work in the Pajaro Valley of California. Tell us a little bit about the Pajaro Valley.
Well, the Pajaro Valley is really blessed with some unique features, and it does affect the value of the land. And the primary unique feature is the microclimate that we enjoy, sometimes take for granted, but the microclimate provides an opportunity for us to grow a variety of cool climate plant crops that, properly irrigated and rotated, are very, very profitable.
Mm-hmm. So you probably wouldn't be able to get away with that in Winnemucca, Nevada.
That's correct. Not even in Hollister.
Not even close, right?
Significant difference when you just go over the hill.
Just for a few miles.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, also with us today, we have Randy Dickott, who is the Vice President of Real Estate Operations for Farmers National Company in Omaha, Nebraska. Cornhusker, tell me you're a Cornhusker, Randy.
You bet. Everybody in Nebraska is, and elsewhere, too.
That's right. Can't get away without it. Welcome to the Food Chain. So happy to have you aboard. Tell us a little bit about Farmers National.
Farmers National is the largest farm management, farm and ranch real estate company in the country. We're employee-owned and have about 265 employees plus about another 100 or so real estate associates scattered from the foothills of the Rockies down through Texas, Louisiana, and east to Ohio. So we cover the grain belt of the country, doing management of farms for non-operating landowners, and also selling farms at auction. auctions and private treaty sales for anyone interested in selling their property.
Well, good. So you're kind of like right there in the heartland, and you do pretty much everything as a Farmers National. You, I guess what, sell farmland, you buy farmland, you operate farmland, you do it all.
Well, we are a fiduciary agent for our farm and ranch management clients and act in their best interest in preserving the land and also working with the farm and ranch tenants who lease the land from them. We do mineral leasing and management, hunting leases, timber.
Randy, are you on a, excuse me, Randy, are you on a, on a landline phone or something? We're losing you in and out here.
Okay.
Maybe you could just go on the handset, and that would work a little better for us.
There. Is that better?
That sounds much better. Thank you. Okay. Good. Now, are you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, good. So you were saying you kind of do it all there, from stem to stern, right?
Yes, we do. We concentrate on managing farms and ranches, being a fiduciary agent for our non-operating landowners, mm-hmm. and represent them in preserving the property, the land, and also working with the farm and ranch tenant for leasing and so forth. And we do timber management, hunting leases, oil and gas leasing, appraisals, so kind of anything to deal with the land.
And there's a lot to do with the land, right? So tell
yes,
us a little bit about your kind of farmland. We're with Chuck Allen here, and he's got one kind of farmland, and you have a different kind of farmland.
Our land here, mainly we're dealing with the commodities, the corn, soybeans, wheat, milo, some crops like sugar beets, alfalfa in cases, and also ranch land, you know, grazing land for cattle.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean by a commodity? This is something that I think it's really important for people to understand. There's a difference between a commodity and a specialty crop. How would you define that?
Well, in our area, with the commodities would be crops that are raised in bulk and are typically fed to livestock or processed before they become actually eaten by consumers. You know, wheat is kind of an exception. It's processed, milled directly and to make breads and flours and so forth. So,
okay. What do you think? Do you have something to add to that definition, Chuck? Difference between a commodity crop and a specialty crop?
Yes, we refer to some of the production as wholesale production versus retail production. And many of ours, as you know, many of our producers here in our local area, they're kind of cottage industry type of people. But you can make a good living growing organically and going to farmers markets or going to specialty drop-off places where people pre-purchase.
So in some way they make a potato special.
That's correct, yes.
Well, that's good. And if I have a question for both of you that is kind of a two-part question. Part one is, in the long run, as both of you look down the road, and I'm sure both of you have a tremendous amount of experience in this, what do you think will best hold its value over the next 50 years? Will it be farmland? Will it be gold? Or will it be oil? Chuck?
That's a good question. And I think, obviously, farmland has many, many virtues, one of which is producing food, and we know that we're all going to need an abundant supply of food. In the past, we've overproduced the food products, but I don't think that's going to be the case as we go into the future. Farmland is, as Mr. Dickhut said, is a commodity also. And it's interesting, the institutional investors, in contrast to the producers or the growers, are both competing with each other in the marketplace for this land. So
the prices are good. Well, let me ask you, Randy, looking down the road 50 years, what do you think? What is going to hold its value best? Will it be farmland? Will it be gold? Will it be oil?
Well, I believe farmland will always have a prominent place in any long-term portfolio for whether you're a producer or an investor, because it's not only the land that is important, but it's also the resources used to produce the crops, whether they be, you know, vegetables, fruit, or the grain commodities, because, you know, we're looking at the need for water, fertilizers, transportation, everything that goes with it. So,
and that'll make a great segue to our next segment, is what about the factors that give farmland its value? Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio. Today we're talking about the value of farmland as an investment in the future. You have questions about farmland value and real estate? Give us a call, 800-624-2665, 831-4798. Right back.
Get this. You can earn a 5-6 or 7-figure income by farming a small parcel of land in or near the city.
You can be old or young.
Rich or poor.
Married or single.
You can own land outright.
Or lease it year to year.
You can grow small fruits on prairie bench lambs.
Houseplants in coastal valleys.
Flowers on steep wooded hillsides.
Vegetables in the city green belts.
And ornamentals in neighborhoods of fancy homes.
Get all the help you need to get growing at MetroFarm.com.
Get the complete guide to growing high-value specialty crops for the city at MetroFarm.com.
Get experts to look at your land and assess which crops to grow at MetroFarm.com.
Get advice on how to plan and develop your project at MetroFarm.com.
And get news about the business of farming for the city.
Yes, you can earn a 5-6 or even a 7-figure income by farming high-value specialty crops on a small parcel of land in or near the city.
Grow for the money today at MetroFarm.com. That's MetroFarm.com.
Welcome back, folks. Michael Olson here. You are tuned into the Food Chain Radio Program. Today we're talking about the value of land as a farm resource and its investment potential. What do you think is going to be most valuable in 50 years? Do you think it will be farmland or gold or oil? Well, if you were going to put down everything on that future, what would it be? With us today, we have Chuck Allen, who's a realtor with Keller Williams in Watsonville, California, in the beautiful Pajaro Valley. We also have Randy Dickott, who is the Vice President of Real Estate Operations, Farmers National Company throughout America's great heartland. I'm going to ask a question now about farmland values. How much is your farmland worth? Chuck, you're in the Pajaro Valley of California, a very small, tiny little valley, but a very productive one in terms of dollars per acre. Probably very few can match it in that kind of comparison. What is the value of the best farmland in the Pajaro Valley per acre?
Thank you. That's a great question. And we've enjoyed a significant value increase over the last couple of years. Our market values have continued to increase. And by and large, our values are created by the ability to grow multiple crops each year on the same acre of land.
Yeah.
Rotation is important. Fumigation.
But just what is the, just give me a quick.
Well, as an example, the strawberry grower will rotate with a vegetable grower.
Yeah.
The vegetable grower will pick up part of the rent, but he'll also add back some benefits to the strawberry
grower.
There's
lots of value
right
being created. But what is the actual value of farmland right now in the Pajaro Valley? How much dollars per acre?
Yeah, the value, we just closed on one that was, it's zoned for commercial agriculture. It's 14 acres. It's also certified for organic production. It's a little, it has some intrinsic value, but it was a price that was a little over $70,000 an acre.
Holy.
$62,000 an acre was in last year's, there were significant sales.
Mm-hmm. $70,000 an acre. Randy, you're out there in the heartland of America. What is the value of the best farmland out there per acre?
Right. $10,000 to $12,000will cover a lot of the good Midwestern Corn Belt farmland.
So, Randy, there's a significant difference then. So not all farmland is the same, right?
Correct.
Why would farmland in the Pajaro Valley be worth seven times that of the heartland?
Well, it really boils down to the economics of the revenue and profit generated by the producer from that underlying product that they're, or crop that they're growing and selling into the marketplace. So the higher in the grain belt, the higher price paid over the last few years for corn, soybeans, wheat supported the increase in land values here. And so the economics, what can be produced on it, it's very similar to commercial real estate or rental apartments that, you know, what the rent can be collected is capitalized into what the value of the property is.
Simple as that.
And one of the things, excuse me, that's been happening consistently throughout the United States is you'd asked the question before we went on the air about how does one invest into the agricultural commodity or an investment. And when you think about investing in farmland, if it's properly taken care of and the irrigation supply is adequate and well maintained, capitalization rates, the acceptable capitalization rates have been around now about 4%.
What does that mean?
Well, in other words, the net income, the net income to an investor, he's willing to accept a 4% net
per year
income per year, and part of that is that it's an investment that doesn't require, there's no roof to fix.
Mm-hmm.
In our case, the tenants take care of the pump maintenance and pay the real estate taxes in addition to the rent. So it truly is a net.
And so 4% a year, are you saying the same thing out there, Randy?
Yes, that would be the return on investment. You can look at it, liken it to a CD rate that mm-hmm. somebody would earn investing their money. And historically on crop land, the landowner's return would be 3 to 5% cash return on their investment per year. That doesn't count the appreciation.
Right. Yeah. A little kicker there, right? Especially when prices
correct.
Have been going through the roof as they have been. So I'd like to talk a little bit about some of the factors that give value to farmland. And I guess one of the big ones is in all of commerce is supply and demand. You know, there is a limited supply of farmland. And as the population of the world grows, it would seem the demand is going to keep increasing. Is there anything wrong with that formula, Chuck?
No. One of the balance is really one of the key issues. And as you know, Michael, here in Santa Cruz County, the leadership of the county has been to maintain agricultural uses and not urbanize the land. That's a competitor.
Mm-hmm. Which reduces the supply, right?
Yes, right. Yeah. That reduces the supply. So we've done a pretty good job of putting regulations and zoning in place to make it very difficult to urbanize mm-hmm. prime farmland.
What about you out there in the heartland, Randy? There's a lot of urbanization going out there as well with those big cities that you have up and down the countryside there.
There has been over the years acreages around the larger cities, but the one thing we have in commodity agriculture is the productivity, the yield per acre keeps going up. That makes up for a lot of that the land that does disappear.
Well, that's a big factor in the supply and demand. If agriculture figures out how to make 10 times more food on 10% of the land, that really changes the valuation, doesn't it?
It does. That's the underlying economics, that if you can produce more net income on that acre, it is more valuable as you capitalize it over its lifetime.
So then it'd be fair enough, if you're going to be considering the supply and demand of farmland, that you have to know some things about the technology of production. As well as, demographics, right? You have to have a pretty good sense of demographics, just as you would if you're going to be building a shopping strip mall someplace.
Yes. One of the factors that is going to be interesting to watch is the technology that we watch a lot of the technology from Holland and Israel, where they actually use greenhouse production and substrate production, and that's berry growers, and I say that strawberries, raspberries, blueberries, all of the berry growers that are headquartered in our community are testing substrate production.
What do you mean by substrate?
Well, or another term might be hydroponics, growing in a protected environment on a bench that would have the nutrients brought to the roots zone artificially.
So you're talking about a situation where you don't even need farmland to grow crops.
Exactly right. And then when you start perfecting that, you think, well, you talked about demographics. Why do it in the Pajaro Valley? Why not take the greenhouse closer to Minneapolis or New York, and have the reduce the shipping time and costs?
Well, that certainly makes sense for very special crops like raspberries or strawberries. But what about the commodity crops? You see any kind of technological breakthroughs in those commodities, Randy?
Well, over the years, it's been a gradual increase. If you look at the national yield trends for corn and soybeans, you'll see the effect of technology. And that technology is not only seed technology, but better use of fertilizers, better use of water, better equipment to plant, harvest, tend the crops, use of better crop scouting methods, and so forth. So our yield trend has definitely gone up. It was only probably 20, 30 years ago we produced 2 billion bushels of soybeans, and now we produce double that at 4 billion.
You're going to have to hold that. We'll be right back. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson, do stay tuned. What do you think out there? What in will hold its value best in the next 50 years? As you look down the road, will it be farmland? Will it be gold? Will it be oil? Will farmers and the technologies that they carry figure out ways of doing without farmland, so farmland will become essentially useless? Do you think that's a possibility? Maybe they can use hydroponics to grow in a parking lot of a Costco or of a big box store, and they won't even need to deliver it. It'll just be right there so you can pick your own. Do you see that as a possibility? Lots of different things to consider in all investments, and farmland being one of them. But, you know, farmland has looked pretty darn good recently because we've had a situation where the government is handing out money for 0% almost, not paying anybody any interest to save any money. So that doesn't make any sense. And the farmland values have been going up, and crop values have been going up. So it looks like pretty darn good times for farmland. What do you think out there in the heartland, Randy?
Well, we have experienced those over that situation over the last few years. But now we had a large corn soybean crops this past year. The prices for those commodities have softened, have retreated from their highs. So that's putting some pressure on the land values. The low interest rates definitely hold up the value, and as long as the interest rates don't move very fast up, that will still support land values. And the other thing is there is not a lot of land being sold right now. It's in pretty tight hands, and nobody's real interested in selling a lot of farmland. There's still some selling, but it's less than usual.
If they were to sell their farmland, what would they invest in, Randy?
That is one of the pieces why people are keeping the land in their portfolio. A lot of people inherit farmland, and they make that decision whether they're going to sell it or retain it and use it as an investment.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like what Pearl Buck said, sell your farmland, lose your family.
Yeah, there's many situations involved.
Uh-huh. So then in times like we've had right here, where, you know, the money is cheap and the crop values have been good, this farmland has been really good. What do you think about the Pajaro Valley, Chuck? Has it been pretty good in the Pajaro Valley?
It has been, yes. And I spoke about the capitalization rate or the return on investment. In 2012, there weren't any institutional investors that would buy below 5%. That was the criteria. Today, they're standing in line to, if you can find the land, to buy at 4%. And again, that has a, just like
what do they
Randy said was the about the alternatives. Our interest rates have not gone up. When the interest rates do start to climb and there are more opportunities for alternative investments, that's going to be an interesting time to watch the value of farmland.
What would be the alternative investment then?
Well, just getting a better return on your CD, mm-hmm. as an example. I mean,
So it depends on how high the interest rates go.
Exactly.
The best investment of all might be to stick it in the bank and get 17%.
Right. You mentioned about families, and I found that usually the fourth generation, when cousins start owning property with cousins, that's when they typically, somebody, one or two, would want to go in a different direction, take their capital and invest differently than the others. And that's usually when you get the opportunity to bring a property onto the market.
So fourth generations.
That's what I've observed.
So the parents have the land and they pioneer the land and they build themselves a place, a little kingdom, and their children take advantage of that and maybe split the equity in it equally and their children. And then by the fourth generation, what's your name?
Yeah, right.
Something
right.
like that.
And, yes.
And you live in New York City and I live here and you want to sell the farm? Gee whiz. And do you see that out there, Randy?
Definitely. It's a very common trend of land ownership. One generation probably farmed it, lived on it. The next generation probably lived in a small town or somewhere near, knew the farmers. Time you get to the third and fourth generation or fifth, they're further removed from the farm. And so then it either consolidates, part of the family buys the other part out to keep the farm, or they do sell it. So that I would agree with that.
So if you're a clever, astute real estate guy, you keep your eyes peeled on the generational moves of the family then. You know, it's a lot different than, you know, in the China of Pearl Buck when people worked the land and had to work the land. You know, I did a radio show from the Phil and Barbara Hamburger farm in South Dakota. They had like 12,500 acres. Not many farmers on that land like there were in the, you know, China of Pearl Buck, where, you know, a whole family would live generation after generation on a few small acres of land. So there's not much room for people on the farmland anymore, is there?
Well, the thing we have, especially in the grain belt, is the efficiency of larger equipment, number of people who want to stay in production agriculture kind of varies over time. But it's just like any industry, as we become more efficient, more automated, do things on a bigger scale, there's fewer people needed actually for the production in many cases.
Well, in real estate, it's always location, location, location. That's rule number one, right? So what elements of location are important for determining the value of farmland, Chuck?
Well, in our case, microclimate is what I think the primary location. The cool coastal microclimate provides such an opportunity to grow any number of fresh crops, fruits, and vegetables. And now with the advent of organic production and organic marketing. I mean, Whole Foods has its purchasing office in Watsonville. That's not accidental. So the people who have been growing organically and selling for one way or another are doing quite well.
Mm-hmm.
Enjoying excellent profits.
So microclimate, being that cool, foggy air that comes in and keeps things from baking in the middle of the summer.
Correct. And 10 degrees, you'll see the strawberries on the west side of the valley and the raspberries on the east side of the valley, and that's because of the 10-degree difference. The raspberries want a little warmer
mm-hmm.
climate.
Okay, folks, we're going to have to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to continue our discussion of the factors that influence farmland values. If you have any questions, pick up your phone and join us. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. We have Chuck Allen, who's a realtor with Keller Williams in Watsonville, California, a very tiny valley that produces a whole lot of money in its crops. We have Randy Dickhut, who is the vice president of real estate operations, Farmers National Company, all throughout the heartland. And you do stay tuned. We will be right back after these important messages. Well, welcome back. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, we're talking about the value of land as a farm resource. Thinking back to the days of Pearl Buck and how farmland was everything because people lived on that land for generation after generation after generation. Not quite that way anymore. As Chuck and Randy were talking about, boy, you see the fourth generation and they're moving on. So we're looking at the factors that have an influence on farmland. We're going to go to the phones right now and pick up, let's see, Wendell. Wendell, welcome to the Food Chain.
Well, I thank you kindly. It's your voice is really agricultural.
full of bleep, right?
Organic.
Organic.
Yeah, very organic farm, Santa Cruz farm.
All right.
Voice. My family owns 10 acres of land here in Aptos, and it used to be an old apple orchard, and it's zone agricultural, and there's road to it access, SoCal Creek water, and electricity to the property. Mm-hmm. And what I want to do is to find out how I go about finding someone who would be interested in either leasing or farming that land.
Well, that's a good question. So you have, you're a person who your family has land.
Yes.
And you're not doing anything with it. So how do you go about finding someone to farm it for you, essentially? Chuck?
Well, that's what I do, is try to match landowners with farming people who want to acquire leased land. And your Aptos land, I'm sure if it's not too steep, it has sandy soil, and it can be certified for organic production. The main thing that it probably is lacking is economical water. It's difficult to farm a piece of property, even organically, and pay the rates that you pay with Soquel Creek. You'd almost need your own well.
Now, that's another thing I've been looking into. I talked to local well driller about where the land is, and he's given me a price of approximately $40,000 to $50,000 to put a well on it.
Yeah, and that would be a very good investment, because
then you have your own water.
And I can say that the organic growers, the small berry growers, raspberry particularly, herb growers would be attracted to that microclimate that you have there in Aptos.
Thank you for the call, Wendell. Really appreciate it. Randy, what about out in the heartland and somebody, there's a lot of family-owned properties that, and the people are willing to farm them themselves. Do you do the same thing that Chuck does, match land with people?
Yes, we do. That's a major part of our business. And there's always plenty of farmers in most areas who are looking to expand the number of acres they farm. So usually is no problem finding a tenant for a crop farm in this part of the world.
Sounds like both of you are of the same opinion. If there's good land, there's people who will want it. Pretty much the case. Is there enough farmland now, Chuck?
Well, the phone keeps ringing. I seem to, I'm not being glib, but like Randy said, the growers seem to want to continue to expand their production. Mm-hmm. And there's new growers that
are always looking.
10 acres a decade or so ago was something that was not an economic unit. But today, with the sophistication of the organic marketing and the prolificacy of the farmers' markets, particularly in the Bay Area, I mean, it's transformed the capabilities that, mm-hmm. that families have if they really are dedicated to doing what they like to do.
What about farm size out in the heartland, Randy, where you're doing commodities? What is the minimum economic size of a farm out there?
For a farm operator, it's probably, depending on the area with quality of the land and production potential, it will vary from 1,000 acres to 2,000 acres would be kind of a minimum fully employed sustainable operation.
Yeah, I probably couldn't turn a tractor around in 10 acres, could you?
Well, there's efficiency to be gained by a larger tract when you're raising corn and soybeans.
What about politics? What about the impact of government on the value of farmland? Chuck?
Well, I spoke earlier about the influence of zoning regulations that prohibit the conversion of farmland to urbanized uses. Mm-hmm. Technically, all of the parcels that we have within our area could support one house, one resident. So you could say that our whole valley is already subdivided if somebody wanted to do that. But fortunately, we haven't, nobody's picked up on that yet. But anyhow, that's been a good thing in my
sure. Got to protect the land then.
Yes.
Well, Randy, out there in the heartland, there's a different impact of government in that they subsidize crops, and that has an impact on the value of farmland, does it not?
It did over in the previous couple decades a little bit more because of the lower grain prices. The commodity price support mechanism that were in place for those commodities definitely lent support to the farm generated incomes, which then gets capitalized into the land value. As farm programs changed, that became much less so, and in the last few years, it was probably negligible, the effect on the land value. One thing that has is the support of crop insurance. That has helped take out a little bit of the risk of production agriculture, so that is part of the capitalized into some land value, probably. One thing more locally is if you're in an irrigated area in a water district.
Oh, hold the water thought. Got to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll pick up water. What has to do with land value, so I bet a little. Right back. Looking down the road 50 years, what's going to hold its value best? It will be farmland. What about gold? What about oil? Everything goes up and down, but what will hold its value best in 50 years? That's the question on the table today. One of the big things, of course, that determines the value of farmland is water. And as has been said, though not by Samuel Clemens, out here in California, whiskey is for drinking and water is for fighting, Chuck.
I've heard that said, and I've watched it happen. And, yes, water is, and particularly, you know, here we're in our second or maybe third year of our drought, and we're probably fortunate as a valley close to the Monterey Bay that we've never really had imported water.
Yeah.
So, and we've chosen to not spend our money on imported water, but we've chosen to create efficiency in using the water that we do have.
Yeah.
And even to the point of using tertiarily treated effluent, blending that and using that on fresh...
Kind of using it by the thimbleful now, right?
Well, so, in contrast to what used to happen, the 40s and 50s and 60s was flood irrigation.
Yep. What about you out there, Randy? You've got the great Oglala Aquifer. Is that going to last forever?
There's most of our commodities are produced without any additional irrigation water, except for certain states like Nebraska, parts of Kansas, some of Texas, Oklahoma, the Mid-South, the Delta region does a lot of irrigation. But the vast majority are still produced without irrigation water.
It's amazing.
So one quick question for the both of you. How do people invest in farmland without actually buying the farmland? Randy?
Typically, the investor is actually purchasing it by themselves or with some kind of entity. There are pension funds who manage the money. They invest in farmland. But typically, farmland in this area is owned by individuals
by
or
people.
Small groups.
Chuck?
Well, I'll give an example. There's one person who was, he really likes our valley. And before he even formed his REIT and had it sanctioned by
REIT
Real Estate Investment Trust and sanctioned by the Securities and Exchange Commission. anyhow, he was purchasing land, but now you can find that investment opportunity on the NASDAQ stock exchange under the word land, L-A-N-D.
Wow.
And so you can invest in farmland through these real estate investment trusts that will pay like probably about a 2.5 to 3% return and leverage that so that it does go up in value.
So you get the value of the inflation. So we're almost out of time. So how do we get in touch with you, Randy?
I would be on the internet. You can see our website at farmersnational.com, or my phone number is 402-590-2324.
Great. And Chuck?
And I also have a website, and my phone number is 831-818-1069.
What's your website?
It's my KW Commercial Chuck Allen website.
Okay. And what is the address?
Just that.
Okay. KW Chuck Allen?
Yes.
Okay. Folks, thank you all for tuning in. This has been the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson with Chuck Allen, a realtor with Keller Williams in Watsonville, California. Randy Dickhut, a vice president of real estate operations, Farmers National Company, Omaha, Nebraska. Remember Michael Olson's second law of the food chain. The farther you get from the source of your food, the less control you have over what's in that food. Thank you for tuning in.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.